has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified concerning him. He cried out, saying, "This is the one I spoke about when I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me, because he was before me.' Out of his fullness we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in the closest relationship with the Father, has made him known."
Well, do keep that passage open, John chapter 1, on page 1063, if you've lost it. Am I audible, Leo? Great. Let me pray. Dear Father, please help us as John did, to see the glory of the Lord in Jesus as we think about this passage now. Amen. For thousands of years, humanity has asked itself how to connect with the divine. We look around and we ask, is this it? And perhaps this dissatisfaction is most felt when we've been working to something in life and then we do actually make it and we get the unexpected anticlimax. I remember once upon a time, I wanted to get on a plane and go across to the other side of the world. And as time went by, I did get that chance. And I even rode an elephant along the Thai-Burma border. And I remember thinking, oh. Ecclesiastes 3:11 says this: God has put eternity into man's heart. Or perhaps put another way, the greatest thinker of the Western world, Aurelius Augustine, said this: our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. The divine. We have a longing, don't we? Some people call it a God-shaped hole in our hearts. And the most logical explanation is that there is the divine out there. God is there to be known. This is why C.S. Lewis, who wrote the Narnia books, put it. A baby feels hunger. There is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there is such a thing as water. Men feel sexual desire. Well, there is such a thing as sex. If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. The divine. We want to know what is out there. But how do we know? How can we know what God is like? And here I feel there are many dead ends. Perhaps the first dead end is trying to understand God through human reason alone. Many people have tried it. On many levels, it does sound like a very good way of doing it. Use our brains. Why not? But people tried it. 17th century, René Descartes. And the result that they got was just a reflection of themselves. God in our image. Basically a big version of us who wouldn't challenge us. Or perhaps another dead end has been the way people have tried to do this is through experience. Try and connect with God, with getting out there. Go to a mountain or listen to some music and try and see if we can connect to God that way. And yet we wake up the next morning and we ask ourselves, was that real? Was that God touching me, or was it just me? Or lastly, institution. Trying to connect through God through the special buildings or the services or the candles and sacrifices and the priests. And many of us have tried to connect with God in that way. And yet, realizing that it is only a human building with humans in it telling us about God. It's an issue for us, isn't it? Do we feel like we know God right now? Or do we feel that we're unsettled and just trying to go down some of those dead ends and just finding they don't seem to cure us at all? There is only one way to find out what God is like. Let's say you get back home and you live in this apartment, and some of your neighbours are talking about this new person who's just moved in upstairs. You hear this person is Alex. And people are talking about it, and one of your neighbours you overhear says, "Ah, right, Alex. I know a bit about her. I think she is probably a nurse." And then another person says, no, I don't think that. I think Alex is probably retired." And, of course, this discussion could go on and on for a long time with speculation and all sorts of things. But really, the only point at which we're actually going to know who Alex really is when Alex comes downstairs, and then you realise he's a giant chap who's 6'4" and he has a goatee, and he says, "Hi, I'm Alex, and my friends call me Al." We need the man upstairs to come down to us, to show us what God is like. And that is the headline of this passage today, that through Jesus, the God-man, we can know God fully and personally. So we're about to enter this time of period that some people have sometimes called Advent, a time of waiting for Jesus in preparation for Christmas. And so what better way to spend that time than thinking about Jesus in John chapter 1? This is very much a sort of Jesus 101. And we're going to be thinking about Jesus from John chapter 1 over the next three weeks. So let's begin as John chapter 1 begins. This man, Jesus, is God. Two of the other accounts of the Gospels and the life of Jesus start with the birth of Jesus. But John says, no, you have to go much further back than that. Much, much further. You need to go back to the beginning of time. Did you see in verse 1? In the beginning. This is the point you have to go back to find Jesus. Perhaps you might notice the echoes of Genesis 1:1, the first three words in the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We're thinking, this is where we need to go back to understand who Jesus is. And you see, we're introduced to this character, the Word. In the beginning was the Word. Have a look at verse 3. We see a bit about what this Word is like and what it's doing. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. This Word has created everything. In fact, John writing this can go one step further and say there's nothing that this Word didn't create. Sorry if that's too many negatives for us, but there's nothing you could find that's not created by this Word. Creating. Now, this is about the most God thing that someone could ever do. You see, you and I can't actually create anything. In the biblical sense of the word, we can't make matter out of nothingness. We just can't do it. You're either the creator, like God, or you're the created, like us. And this word is definitely on the creator side of the line. Have a look at verse 2. Verse 1. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And we don't know who this Word character is until we get to verse 14. Have a look. And the Word's identity is revealed. Verse 14. Have a look down with me. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son. This is talking about Jesus. And you see the punch that John is giving us right at the beginning of the gospel. Jesus is God. There's a saying that goes, if it looks like a duck, if it swims like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, then it probably is a duck. And we read these verses. If he's creating like God, if he's giving life like God, then he is God. John says to us that this Jesus of Nazareth, born 2,000 years ago, this was the God-man. Now, the point is sometimes made that if you go to the National Gallery and you find one of those pictures of Jesus on the wall, the point is often made that it's probably not what Jesus looked like. You know, Jesus wasn't a sort of Italian man with sort of long, brown, sort of curly hair. And we often chuckle about that, but how about our own mental picture of Jesus? Could we be making the same mistake that some of those people did when they were painting Jesus? Just painted Jesus how to look like them, how they were like in their image. Does our mental picture of Jesus have space for Jesus, the God-man, the one who created the whole world? We're going to think a bit more about the right response to Jesus in our next heading. Don't miss him as others did. Don't miss him as others did. We're in verses 5 to 13. Now, they start very positively, don't they? Verse 5, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. We're thinking light. I'm thinking this is John's language for God revealing. Think of when we use the term, like when we say it came to light, understanding God. And it gets better still. Have a look at verse 6 and 7. We're introduced to John, John the Baptist. He's coming as a witness to testify concerning that light so that everyone may believe. He's the forerunner. He's preparing the way for Jesus to come. But when Jesus actually arrives, he gets a very surprising response. In fact, a scandalous response. The scandal of unbelief. Have a look at verse 10. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. Jesus, the Creator, comes to his own creation and they don't realize who he is. It's sometimes said, isn't it, that perhaps if God was to come down tomorrow, we would all believe in him. That would be enough for us. But the reality is that God did come down in Jesus and people didn't recognize him. And it gets worse. Verse 11. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. That's talking about Jesus' own people. Think of the religious leaders in Jesus' day. Those who would have had the promises of the Old Testament, talking of a Messiah who's going to come down and save the world, and they missed him too. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Now, if I was one of these early Christians who John was writing this gospel to, I think I would be quite discouraged by the fact that people were not responding to Jesus the way they should, and the fact that Jesus was not acknowledged as Lord by everyone. I think I would be quite discouraged by that. I think it's something that discourages us today. But actually, John turns the issue right on its head. Did you see? Actually, he says, it's scandalous. Do we not realize how scandalous it is to miss our own Creator when he comes down to see us. A couple of years ago, I was sitting with Esther having lunch in St. Albans, and I didn't realise it, but famous British actor Martin Freeman was sat right behind me, famous for things like The Hobbit, The Office, and the Sherlock. He was right behind me, and I didn't even know it. Now, perhaps I could be forgiven for not knowing who he was. But what if perhaps Martin Freeman came up to me that lunchtime and said, "Hi, I'm Martin Freeman. You may remember me from my famous films." Now, then I would have no excuse to not know who he was, having been introduced, and he tells me exactly who he is. But that is exactly what happened when Jesus arrived. He came to his own, but his own did not receive him. It's the scandal of unbelief. So what John is saying to us is this: Jesus came to us, but not everyone realized who he is. Don't make sure you don't make the same mistake. You don't make the same mistake, because you'll be missing out on so much. Have a look at what happens when someone believes in Jesus, what they get in verse 12. "Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." Children of God. A chance to be in God's family and loved by him. Now, some of you may know we had a new addition to our family, Daniel Griffin, who I think sadly has gone out because he's got a bit of a cold and sniffly. But he was born into our family. And so whether he knows it or not, he can be sure that he will be loved by me, and that I will know him, and that I will cherish him and look after him and look after his needs, even though he doesn't really know how to deal with his needs at this stage. Jesus offers something even greater than that: a chance to be a part of God's family, with God as our Father, looking after him, looking after us in a way that none of us as human parents ever could. The most loving family there is, knowing God in an intimate way like never before. Now, I realize that there are lots of conflicting voices in our lives about Jesus. Perhaps the secular person who tells us that Jesus was only a myth. Or perhaps the Muslim person who'd say that Jesus was just a prophet. Or will we listen to John, the eyewitness who saw Jesus as the Creator? Anything less than realizing that Jesus is the Creator, we miss out on the amazing privileges that we can have to be known by God in his own Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. So we've seen that Jesus can make us Jesus can make us children of God. I want to see how this passage takes things to another higher level, even better, in verse 14, in the climax of this passage. Jesus is God made known. Jesus is God made known. We're thinking about how Jesus, the God-man, came to earth. Here's the climax of our passage, verse 14. "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." So this language of dwelling picks up on the Old Testament idea of when God dwelt with his people in a tabernacle in this tent in the desert. And there was only limited access then. But Jesus is giving that access to an even greater degree than ever before. Access to God. God dwelling with us. And you can see what that means. Have a look at verse 14 again. Second half. "We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son. It's this language of glory. Again, looking back to the Old Testament, back to the Exodus times when Moses had the amazing privilege of being able to see what God is like. He said to God, "Show me your glory." And he only managed to be able to see the back of God's robe. But he saw something amazing. This is what happened when Moses looked on God's glory and just saw a little bit. Let me read you what happened. "The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, 'The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty.'" Moses saw the very character of God, a loving, gracious, and also just. And Jesus is showing us that in an even greater way, showing us what God is really like. Have a look at verse 17. "For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." This grace and love, it's coming in an even greater way than ever before. Now, normally, we would be able to work through the whole of John's Gospel, and we could see how that idea really sort of lands. And what do we actually mean by us seeing the glory of God? But because we're just looking at John 1 this month, and I'd really love us to see where this really lands, let me show you a little bit about what that actually means. So, the point at which Jesus fully reveals the character of God to us in this amazing way was when he died. As Jesus predicted his death, he said this: "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." There's that language again, glorified, seeing God. At the cross of Christ, the heart of God's character is revealed. Moses saw God's love and God's justice. The cross reveals that in an even greater way, as we see the great love of God in dying for people who'd rejected him and ignored him in a terrible way. And also the justice of God, satisfying the punishment that people like us deserve. Love and justice, amazingly satisfied both on the cross. If you could take a picture of God, actually I'd do this, but I should probably do something like that. But if you were to do that, what would be saved on the camera? It would be God dying on a cross for us. That is what a picture of God would look like. Jesus dying for us to woo us to him, to make us his family. Listen how verse 18 sums it up. "No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in the closest relationship with the Father, has made him known." Here in Crouch End, there's lots of ways that people are looking for God. People are hungry here, aren't they? But only one full revelation of God, a revelation as God has spoken in his Son. Here's where we land. We can know God fully and personally through Jesus, the God-man who came down to us. Application. Well, in light of these truths, Jesus is the most important person to know this Christmas. That's right. Christmas is just around the corner. And it is time for Christchurch Crouch End to wage war on Christmas. Now, I don't mean that we all talk about, you know, how we went into a shop and it was playing Last Christmas And we're pretty sure they're playing the track a bit earlier than they were last year. No, I don't mean that. It's about a war for hearts. A war for hearts to make Jesus the most important person to know this Christmas. It's a war for our hearts, isn't it? Now, I realise that much is said about the commercialisation of Christmas, but perhaps we're a little less immune to it than we actually think, given that it has been around for so, so long, since before all of us were ever born. It's just part of the air we've breathed. It always has been. And it would be very easy over the coming months for all the Christmas prep, all the groceries, all the family planning, all the presents, all the TV, just to squeeze out Jesus. Now, I'm conscious that I'm talking to busy people, and I could end up preaching the sermon and just say, right, you've got lots of things that you all need to do, and you also need to squeeze in Jesus. Actually, perhaps 90% of this, as I've been thinking about it, is actually just cutting away all the stuff that stops us getting to know Jesus. A family member of mine, who I think was on a similar vein as this, said to me, do you know what? I think maybe we should just sort of tone down the volume this Christmas. Perhaps it's just got a little bit out of hand in our family, and we just need to draw it back and just get back to basics. Take the pressure off a bit. Or perhaps on the flip side, I remember last Christmas, one of the best moments actually was spent on the M1 for two hours driving up to Loughborough to see family. And there we were listening to carols, old and new, singing to Jesus. And I just thought that was absolutely brilliant. Time singing to Jesus, celebrating the real reason for the season. It's a war for the hearts of ours, and also it's the war for hearts of everyone else, isn't it? Jesus shows us that we have some brilliant news to give to people. A chance to be fully loved and fully known. A chance to know God. It's the thing that everyone is looking for, but doesn't know where to find. Something that our friends, our family, our neighbours and colleagues, it's something that they desperately need. They need to know Jesus. So if you're, do please come around with us this afternoon to Flyer. Take advantage of the fact that it's still November and there's still time to prayerfully think about who to invite and who to talk to about Jesus this Christmas. And also praying while it's still November before it just sneaks up on us. No one has ever seen God. But the one and only Son, who is himself God and in closest relationship with the Father, he has made him known. Let's pray.